Straight is the road we're called to travel, many the trials along the way.
There's a brighter day,
brighter day on the other side. Trouble is always there before us, trusting in Jesus we can say,
there's a brighter day,
brighter day on the other side.
There's a brighter day,
brighter day coming over on the other side.
Rejoice with the
saints in a heavenly land we'll ever abide.
So happy we'll be,
no more pain, no sorrow, saints we'll say goodbye.
There's a brighter day
waiting for me on the other side. Riding with Jesus through the battle, standing on his amazing grace.
There's a brighter day,
brighter day on the other side. Trusting the one who died to save us, soon we shall see his blessed face.
There's a brighter day,
brighter day on the other side.
There's a brighter day,
brighter day coming over on the other side.
Rejoicing with the
saints in a heavenly land we'll ever abide.
So happy we'll be,
no more pain, no sorrow, saints we'll say goodbye.
There's a brighter day
waiting for me on the other side.
There's a brighter day,
brighter day coming over on the other side.
Rejoice with the saints
in a heavenly land we'll ever abide.
So happy we'll be,
no more pain, no sorrow, saints we'll say goodbye.
There's a brighter day
waiting for me on the other side. What a happy day is waiting for me on the other side.
On the other side. Good morning and welcome to the Word of Life. In the last few weeks, a lot has gone on in our country. We have seen and heard many, many statements from opposing sides, as in itself is nothing unusual. But the statements seem to be degrading into something that's just uglier and uglier every day. You and I have watched this country change over our lifetime, and I'm not bemoaning the fact that change has happened. Change is not always a bad thing. The change that we have seen politically in our country, where people become more antagonized with others and not able to listen without trying to shout down people, whichever side of the aisle you come from, is one of those struggles that we have. Being able to disagree without being disagreeable is something that's a real art. It's a part of character. And when a person feels like that by simply shouting louder they are heard, as opposed to the reasoning process that needs to go on to come to the best understanding of any given situation, then we've got a real struggle on our hands. Because a part of a republic like we are here in this country is being able to both debate ideas and to exchange ideas in the public marketplace and be able to share the thoughts that we have without the ridiculousness of just getting louder in order to be heard. You can't help but think, when you think of this, if you are a disciple of Jesus, of the words of Jesus that are recorded in Matthew chapter 12, verse 33 through 37. I want to take a few moments, perhaps a short break from our studies that we have been doing on the crucifixion of Jesus, and talk about for just a few moments the country that we live in and the people that we are. In Matthew chapter 12, if you've got your Bible turned there, verse 33, we begin reading this. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for the tree is known by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, the evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Now, verse 37 would make no sense at all unless it was in the context of the statement that Jesus made. You'll see that Jesus, in the end of verse 34, makes the point about our words, that the words that come out of our mouth are what's gone into our heart and what resides in our heart. When Jesus said that, he forever made us responsible for the choice that we make of what goes into us and what comes out of us. You know, it's one of those struggles that we have in this country that we seem to want to fill up with everything in the world except God. And then we want people to be held to a standard of saying good things and speaking nice things. You see it couched in phrases like, well, like my mom used to say, if you can't say anything good, don't say anything at all. Now, the way that mom meant that was to fill up with the good stuff and say the good stuff. Now, good stuff is not always easy to say. It's not always easy to receive. Because sometimes truth, and that is good things, is very painful to listen to. When you find out that someone has not lived up to the expectations you have, truth is not a good thing to have to endure. When you find out that the doctor tells you that it's not something simple, but it's something very complicated and perhaps terminal in nature that has afflicted you, truth is not an easy thing to listen to. When you are in the midst of this struggle, it's hard to maintain the perspective that Jesus wants us to maintain, which is why with men all things are not possible, with God all things are. It is in the character of Jesus, the sweetness of the serenity of the relationship with God that we have, that we are able to respond to things around us in a calm and reasoned way. Now, don't get me wrong. Sometimes things make us mad. Sometimes things get beside us. We get overwhelmed with the situation. There's no doubt that that happens. But do we have to get out of control? Well, if out of control is what's in our heart, out of control is what's going to come out of our mouth. Look at the statement of verse 33 that Jesus spoke here in Matthew chapter 12. He talks about the relationship of a tree to the fruit that it bears. Here in an area where we have seen many orchards, both now and in times past, you wouldn't walk up to a peach tree and expect to pick oranges. You wouldn't go to a walnut tree and expect to get apples. What the tree is what's going to come out, right? We understand that. Now, the tree might have trouble bearing fruit. I understand that, too. But what Jesus' point is that the tree that is good will bear good fruit. The tree that is bad will bear bad fruit. A sick tree doesn't bear good fruit. You know, it's one of those things that we understand. Jesus goes on in verse 34 and talking about this to say that some people are evil. Now, I would not presume to say that everyone is evil. Jesus didn't say that, and I don't want you to mistake what Jesus is saying. But as he looks at the particular group of people who he is talking to, those that have accused him of being in a relationship with Satan so that he can cast out the demons that he has been casting out, and that's in the verses previous to verse 33, then what Jesus is saying is, you who are evil, what do you expect but that evil would come out of you? That's why he says there in verse 34, for the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. What is it that you choose to allow to fill your heart? What is it that you choose to allow to be the umpire, so to speak, of the words that come out of your mouth? I guarantee you that there are people in this world today who can have an evil heart and still fool you with words of gold. But, you know, over time, it's going to show. And, you know, Jesus is not saying that every single time that you see a person who says good words, they've got a good heart. You know, there are wolves in sheep's clothing. That's what Jesus has talked about at various times throughout his ministry. But you and I understand what Jesus means, don't we? For instance, you can't have a pure mind if you fill up with pornography. You can't have a kind word coming out of your mouth on a consistent basis if you fill up with hate. Bigotry that's in the heart comes out the mouth. Hate that is in the heart comes out the mouth. Ugliness that's in the heart comes out of the mouth. Because our mouth gets away from us, doesn't it? You ever said something and wished right then that you could take it back, but you know good and well that that's a vain wish? Very conservative in speech is the way to be. If you have something to say, you better think about it good, because once it's out of your mouth, it's out there. And even if you apologize, the damage is done. Even if you ask forgiveness, the damage can still be in a position where you can't fix it. The ugliness of our mouth comes from the ugliness of our heart. That's what this comes down to with Jesus. Look at verse 35 and the way that Jesus goes on to describe what the heart does in relation to the mouth. Here he uses not the term heart and mouth, but he uses the term good treasure and good, and evil treasure in evil. Now that's how he is again describing the same thing. Listen to verse 35 again. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good. The evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. Again, we consider what Jesus is saying. He's just simply making a statement of common godly sense, that it's what you fill up with that's going to eventually come out of your mouth. You know, a person has the ability to think things through and to fool people, like we said a while ago. A person that's evil can, by slick words, insincere words, get to somebody. We call it scamming, don't we? You know, somebody gets on the internet with you and they send you a message that says, because I care about you, I want you to know this. I want you to be aware of this. But you know that what a scam means is that somebody is putting on a pretense, a hypocrisy act of being in a position to care for you, and yet what they're wanting is everything you've got. Well, let me remind you that Satan wants everything you've got. And what we need to understand in the world today is that Satan is after us. He doesn't care if he hurts our children. He doesn't care if he hurts our elderly. He doesn't care who he hurts as long as he wins. Because you see, it's out of the abundance of his heart that Satan speaks, that Satan acts, that Satan does everything that he does. Now, don't think that Satan's just a non-personal force of evil. He is one who reasons. He is one who understands some of the ways of people. Now, though Satan is limited by God, he is limited in the sense that, well, we described it one time before in our studies here on the program. It's like a chained dog. If the dog is vicious and chained to a stake in the yard, say he's got a 10-foot chain, and 10 feet on either side of that stake, that dog roams, and that dog can do in that area whatever he wants. Now, if you stay 15 feet away, though you may be scared of the dog, though you may have to listen to him, you don't have to fear the damage that his teeth and claws can do to you. But you get inside his area, and you're at his mercy. Whatever he can accomplish, that's what he'll do. Now, Satan's like that too. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 tells us that our Savior Jesus, by the work of Calvary, has limited Satan in what he can do. Satan cannot force you away from God. Oh, he can convince you that you need to leave God. He can convince you that God has left you, that God has failed you. But the truth of the matter is that unless you step in his chained area, you are not in the danger that Satan poses. You give in to him, and you are in danger. Now, the way we sometimes give in to him is very subtle. We get filled up with all the wrong things. We get so busy with things that we can't do what have the time to do what's right. We get so full of ugliness that all we can say is ugly. I have had instances here in the last 2 weeks where I have had disciples that I know using profanity and vulgar language. Their actions and thoughts follow along. Why? Well, because they've got filled up with the wrong stuff. You cannot continually be filled with their own stuff and say the right words and do the right things. So good treasure leading to good, evil treasure leading to evil. You see, Jesus expands his thought there in verse 35 with this treasure thing by pointing out that it is not just what is there, but it's what we value. There are some things that people value that they shouldn't. Let me give you an example. The love of money is the root of all evil. That is a statement of Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 6. As we look at that statement, what we find, think about it, is that it's not the money itself that's evil. It's the love of it, the worship of it, the idolatrous relationship that we gain sometime with it. And you see this acted out. People are real quick to condemn, quote-unquote, corporate America for being that kind of money-grubbing business people. In other words, all they want is money. They don't care about who they run over. You see, when you get one thing out of order, other things suffer. And if you put the wrong thing in your heart, you've got something out of order, and what's going to suffer? Well, number one, you're going to suffer. Number two, those around you are going to suffer. And number three, people that you don't even know that listen to you, that watch you, that follow what you do will be damaged by what you have chosen. In a few minutes, we're going to come back and look at verse 36 and 37. Right now, a song.
The Spirit showed to John a wondrous vision from heaven's highest realm, a holy city did descend with its crystal river gates of pearl and great celestial chambers. John saw it, but could scarcely comprehend. This place of perfect peace that's everlasting, where death is gone forever and where no one will grow old, and the sun is overshadowed by the Lamb in all his glory. What a vision we too shall sorrow, no more night. When the Lamb becomes a light, at times our eyes are filled with tears of sadness, yet we hold to the promise that these tears will pass away. And though the world around us now is filled with pain and suffering, we await that bright and glorious day. When the Lamb becomes the light, and the faith that we've held on to becomes sight, there'll be no more weeping, no more sorrow, no more night. When the Lamb becomes a light, there'll be no more weeping, no more sorrow, no more night. When the
Now, as we have developed this thought of Jesus and looking just at what he says, and I hope you realize I don't intend to add anything of me in this, but just what Jesus is saying, what we've seen is that starting with a very clear and simple illustration of trees and good trees and bad trees and good fruit and bad fruit, he has taken that to the point of understanding that our heart is filled with either evil or good, and that that evil brings out evil and that good brings out good. So the choice of what we put in our heart is what has determined what we see around us. Now, again, I want to call your attention before we look at verse 36 and 37 to the dialogue that you see happening in our country every day, whether it's dialogue that's given in the entertainment that we choose, movies or music or whatever it might be, or whether it is a political dialogue, whether it's in on Facebook or wherever it happens to be. Hate is spewed out by a lot of people. Ugliness is spewed out by a lot of people. And let me tell you that it is a real understanding and a provable understanding that if that's what's coming out of the mouth, that's what's in the heart. We need to ask some questions of ourselves. Look at verse 36. Here's where Jesus turns the corner and begins to talk about the other end of this thing. Now, we have the right to choose what fills our heart. We have the right to choose then by that what comes out of our mouth. But here is what Jesus says. And verse 36 and 37 stand together. I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, by your words you will be condemned. Now, when he says careless there, it also could be translated as useless. The useless word would have to be in the context here, the word that comes from being filled with evil, wouldn't you say? Wouldn't that be your understanding of how Jesus would be progressing through this statement? And if it is, then what we see is that many useless words can be spoken, but all of them will be dealt with. All of them will be talked about as far as being faced by us. You see, it's not just that we will face God, but it's that we will face our choices. It is not very popular today in the culture, the society that we live in, for people to talk about the result of choices, the outcome of choices. Now, people talk about making better choices, and most people present it like this, that education is the key, that people need to know that there are better choices. Man has never been able to fix himself. Man does not have the ability to rise above by himself what is around him. Now, there are certain individuals that stand out. I understand that. But we're talking about the world in general. And what we are looking at here is that if a person refuses outside help, do they have the ability, and I mean help outside of humanity, do they have the ability to rise above what's around them? And you would immediately say, oh, look at this person, look at that person, you know. And I understand, as I said, that there are people that make better choices and people that make worse choices. This is not about better and worse. This is about the ultimate best versus all other. I don't consistently make good choices on my own, and you don't either. What Jesus is talking about here is that the choices that we make of what to fill with and what to speak of will come back to face us. This is not karma, by the way. This is not an impersonal force of tit for tat, of one thing happening and it'll come back on you. This is a picture of the righteous character of God versus what we have chosen. Do you realize that when God created this world that we live in, that He did not create it with evil? Now, He created it with people, and people have a choice, and people have chosen evil. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God is a clear statement of Scripture, Romans chapter 3. Our sins and iniquities have separated us from God, Isaiah chapter 59. The very choice that we've made to go our own way versus going the way of God has separated us from God. What we see around us is not the result, in that sense, of God's creating evil, but it's a choice that we have made. And you know what the consequences of the choice that we have made are? The consequences are what we see around us. If we are directly responsible for the choices that we make, then we are directly answerable to the consequences that come from them. So in verse 36 and 37, what Jesus then says is these useless words that come from the evil treasure, that come from the evil that's in our heart, that come from the evil tree, the bad tree, so to speak, all these will be answered for. Why? Why will they be answered for? Look around you and see the damage that's done by things out of control. By choices made to fill up with the wrong thing, by the ugliness that we have chosen as opposed to the better that's available. What has this done to people? You see people assaulted, people abused, people mishandled, people that are verbally put down. I mean, the list could go on and on, right? And I don't mean to leave anybody out. I just don't have time to make the list of all the things that are the result. But whose fault is this? Well, you know, it's not the government's fault, and it's not the people's fault. It's our fault. It's all of us. Because we have all chosen at some time to fill with what we shouldn't fill with and to speak what we shouldn't speak, to fill with what we shouldn't fill with and to act in a way that we shouldn't act. Some people take advantage of others on a regular basis. They have told themselves in their mind that it's justified because if that person's weak enough that I can do this, I ought to be able to do it. That's not the right way. We need an anchor is what we need. We need something to hold us to a course that's true and a course that's better. In a few moments, we'll offer you that anchor. Right now, a song.
I was a slave in a foreign land, so very far from the Father's loving hand. He rescued me one glorious day. He brought me out, paid a debt I could not pay. I am redeemed, I am redeemed. Jesus loosed the chains of sin and set me free. I am redeemed, I am redeemed. Jesus loosed the chains of sin and set me free. Still I live, still I live in a foreign land, but now I'm free according to redemption's plan. Soon I'll join the robed in white, the redeemed. We'll sing the song holy angels cannot sing. I am redeemed, I am redeemed. Jesus loosed the chains of sin and set me free. I am redeemed, I am redeemed. Jesus loosed the chains of sin and set me free. I am redeemed, I am redeemed. Jesus loosed the chains of sin and set me free. I am redeemed, I am redeemed. Jesus loosed the chains of sin and set me free.
When people talk to me about a God who is distant, a God who doesn't care about the struggles and problems they have, I'm quick to remind them of the statement of Isaiah 53, that Jesus, by being Messiah, has chosen to become a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. He left behind the insulation from grief and chose to step right into the middle of what we live. Now, if you had the choice of being insulated from everything that you see that's ugly around you and stepping into the middle of it, even if it was to help somebody you love, you would hesitate. Let me tell you what Jesus has offered because of his stepping into this mess. It's one chapter before Matthew chapter 12 and chapter 11, verse 28 through 30, that we see these beautiful words of Jesus that still make an offer today, an offer made to you. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. When Jesus said those words, he forever opened a door that no one can shut. And I want you to understand today that Jesus offers this to you. If you look in the book of Acts in chapter 2, we've talked about from time to time the people that Peter preached to that day who were guilty themselves of involving the Romans in the death of Jesus and making sure that Jesus died less than 2 months before. They were the first persons that were offered what Jesus said here. Those weary and heavy laden with the sin that they had committed were able to find rest in Jesus. Why? Because he fulfilled the requirement of the law from Romans chapter 8, verse 3 and 4, by taking the punishment for them. He'll do that for you. Do you understand? Do you see? The most beautiful heart of eternity offered for you in your place so that he could say, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. The invitation is open to you today. You can come to him. read that passage in Acts 2 and set your heart and your mind to do the right thing and be filled with something better, Jesus Christ. Join us next week on the Word of Life.